Welcome to our interview series for PFPL 522, Behavioral Finance. This interview series explores behavioral finance and its influence on client decision-making from the perspective of industry experts. Behavioral finance attempts to explain the what, why, and how of finance and investing from a human perspective. This implicitly recognizes the difference between rational financial decision makers and irrational financial decision makers. Of course, in a perfect world, everyone would make rational financial decisions. But in the real world, people often make suboptimal decisions for all sorts of reasons, some of which are predictable. As financial planners, we can be better positioned to be of far greater value to clients by understanding the often predictable ways clients make suboptimal financial decisions and by integrating behavioral finance into a financial planning practice. Planners will be able to better explain, anticipate, and ameliorate client behavior. George Kinder is internationally recognized as the father of the life planning movement. Via the Kinder Institute of Life Planning, George Kinder has revolutionized financial advice for over 30 years by training over 3,000 professionals in 30 countries in the field of financial life planning. After 30 years as a practicing financial advisor and tax advisor, the Kinder Institute trainings are recognized worldwide as the standard for trainings in client-advisor relationships. George's three books on money, The Seven Stages of Money Maturity, Lighting the Torch, and Life Planning for You are considered by many to be the seminal works in the burgeoning field of financial life planning. George was the first winner of the Financial Planning Association's Heart of Financial Planning Award, which recognizes individuals who demonstrate commitment and passion in doing extraordinary work to contribute or give back to the financial planning community and or the public. He's also been named one of the 35 most influential people in financial services, one of the top icons and innovators in the financial planning industry, the first of 15 transformational advisors whose vision most changed the industry, and has been inducted into the Financial Planning Magazine Hall of Fame. He's appeared on many radio and television programs, and his expertise has been featured in the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, New Model Advisor, Forbes, Time Magazine, FP Today, the Journal of Financial Planning, Investment News, and the New York Times. Well, thank you to Mr. George Kinder. We are so happy to have you with us.
Well, I'm thrilled to meet you, Gary, and really excited about the interview. Thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. It's definitely our pleasure. Now, one of the things that really jumped out at me, because I've been a fan for quite some time, is I was always interested in how you found your way to financial planning, and also what caused you to rethink traditional financial planning and caused you to go in the direction of what we now know as life planning.
Yeah, great question. And I suspect my attraction to it was similar to other people's in that, well, for me, what was happening, it was I was already working. I was working as a tax accountant, and I'd realized that my clients needed more help than I was able to give them in general finance. I was discovering that they were being taken advantage of by some tax shelters with huge upfront fees. And the people that were helping them were mostly stockbrokers, and they weren't really great listeners. They weren't paying that much attention to who the clients were. So I was thrilled. At first, I discovered NAPFA, the fee-only organization, and then through them, I discovered the CFP program. And mm-hmm. I just thought it for two things. One is professionally, it was perfect for me professionally, but also I was always looking for myself how to understand better, because I couldn't find anybody who would help me. The people who called themselves financial planners back then were mostly product sellers. And
right.
I was really disappointed. I went to see them and they didn't, you know, take a survey of who I was at all. It was very superficial. So I'm answering both questions here at once. So I immediately knew that the greatness of financial planning was about delivering clients into their dream of freedom. And that's what I wanted for myself. And that's what I saw for all my tax clients, that none of them were living exactly as they really wanted to live. And financial planning was a great tool to make that happen.
Awesome. Awesome. Would you say, and I'm just trying to get confirmation here or not, that the early days of financial planning grew out of life insurance, and that's why it may have been skewed towards product salespeople at that time?
Absolutely. It was, I mean, I think of the early days as having life insurance, stock brokerage background, and also a lot of kind of a legal background in a way as to what the what the laws were. And so my personal passion was more about my clients. I guess I was a genuine fiduciary way back when. And I wanted my clients to live the greatest life they could possibly live. And I saw that the current field of financial planning and of brokerage and all of that was geared much too much toward products and spreadsheets and not nearly enough to who the client wanted to be. So that's why we created Life Planning.
Awesome. Now, you've probably given me a little bit of the answer to my next question, but let me go ahead and ask it anyway. What exactly is life planning, and how do you distinguish it from traditional financial planning?
Yeah, great question. You know, when I first started it, I thought I'm doing real financial planning. That's what I'm doing. I never called myself a life planner. And I just thought it was the way that it should be done, that the first thing that we had to do is pay attention to the goals that a client had. And that to do that, we really needed to do deeper work than they teach you in the CFP programs generally, because it really requires a great listening capacity, a real interest in who the client is, and not leaping so quickly toward all the skills that we've accumulated in our programs. So life planning has two stages that expand greatly on that initial discovery meeting that we have in the traditional financial planning engagement. And those two meetings, and this is part of what I call EVOKE, they have an acronym. The first two meetings are the E for exploration and the V for vision. And so in those first two meetings, the first thing we do is we really listen and we build an incredible bond of trust, because we're clearly there for who the client is, not for what we have to pitch or to sell or to promote. And so that's the first meeting, is just listening to the client. And then the second meeting is doing various exercises and questions and that kind of thing that inspires a client to think about what they really want to do, who they really want to be. And it's so much more interesting, meaningful, profound, deep, and practical than the traditional financial planning questionnaire, which goes out, people fill it out, you ask them a few questions when they come in, and then you're off and running with your spreadsheets and your products. It's just much more, it's much more targeted, it's much more fiduciary, it's much more targeted to who the client is.
That makes a lot of sense. So what are some of the questions that you might ask of new clients to get to know them and begin the life planning process?
Well, it's really interesting, Gary. You'll be interested in this as you're a student of behavioral finance. What we do in the first meeting, we pretty much just ask one question, which is, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
And then we pause. And what we're doing is we're giving, sometimes the client feels just a tiny bit uncomfortable, but mostly they see that because we've practiced emotional intelligence, and we practiced really good listening skills. Those are some of the things we train people in life planning. So pretty quickly, the client sees that we're really interested in why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say, well, I'm here for my 401k, or I'm here for asset allocation, but we reframe it and go, no, you know, if we were to work together for a period of time and we were to deliver you into the life you really want, what does that look like? And then we get quiet and we don't say anything about retirement. We don't say anything about taxes or portfolio construction, anything in the traditional financial planning world at all. The next question we ask after the client seems to have finished the answer to that question is, we pause and go, anything else? And we pause again. And we're really showing the client that we're really here to listen and give them time to think deeply and get outside the box of thinking of us as a financial planner full of spreadsheets and products. That we're here for them. We are genuine fiduciaries here for them. Anything else? And we ask anything else probably 5 or 6 times before we begin to think about, you know, the traditional financial planning agenda. So that's the first meeting.
Yeah. So it's sort of the leading question of, can you tell me more about that? Just trying to prompt them to give you more and more information.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's more... I wish we were on video right now because I'd show you. It's more gesture and it's more stance and it's more shifting your head and looking at them really curiously. And more, it's more intonation around how you ask the question, anything else. You might even throw in a brief half sentence before, like, wow, that sounds so interesting. Pause. Is there anything else? So you might say, boy, that's really something. That's got to be part of the plan. And I can see that this piece troubled you a lot. Pause, because emotion's there. You want to pause with the emotion, pause. Is there anything else? And you don't ask them anything else about that. You give them wide room. It's an open-ended question. And that way they don't feel that it's the financial planner's meeting. They really begin to understand that this meeting is all about them and for them to articulate and wander where they want to go in their life, in the past, the things that have been difficult, in the future, the things they aspire to, the secrets that they haven't shared, sometimes even with their spouse, are profoundly important to them to achieve as a human being. And we can't ask them that directly. We have to just kind of listen, and because they've got to trust us. And they, you know all the surveys. You've seen all the surveys of trust, and financial advisors. We're very low on the totem pole. So we build that trust by our listening skills and showing that we're really interested in who they're revealing themselves as wanting to be.
That is amazing. That's one of the things that we focus on intently in this class. That listening skills are important, and that we should be active listeners and really, really get into the client's world so that they can feel comfortable to express what's in their deepest heart.
Absolutely. That's the secret. If you want to be a great financial planner, and there was one clue, the only thing I would say other than that, I mean, that would be the main thing. And the only thing that I would say that might come even before that is that if we're going to be great listeners for them, we should first of all learn how to be a great listener for ourselves.
Awesome. So among the clients that you speak with, or some of the advisors that you train that they speak with, what are some of the 5 pursuits that most clients articulate, and why do they rarely have anything to do with traditional financial planning goals?
Yeah, great. Well, a couple of things with the in the vision meeting, the second meeting, we do a series of exercises, and one thing we do is something that's famously called, I've been interviewed a lot about it, about what are called the 3 questions. And there, really briefly, we ask people, what would you do if you had all the money that you needed for the rest of your life? What would you do? And they're asked in orders because they get progressively deeper. And so the second question is, if you only discovered you only had 5 to 10 years left to live, how would that change things? What would you do with your life? And then the third question is the one that gets deepest. And this is part of the reason that the five pursuits come out in a different realm. We're not asking about taxes. We're not asking about estate planning or retirement planning. The final question that we ask here is, the doctor surprises you and tells you that you've had a rare illness and he misdiagnosed it, and you only have 24 hours left to live. And the question is not what you do during that time. The question is, looking back at your life, what did you miss? Who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? And it's in the answer to all those questions are important, but that's the most important question, because it's the legacy question. It's about, you know, who we've longed to be, who, you know, it's about our kids, or it's about our relationships, or for some of us, it's about something spiritual or something profoundly meaningful, about integrity, about our values, or it's about our creativity or our dedication to our community. Or one of the things that's been powerful these last few decades is the planet Earth, or just simply, mm-hmm. I live in the city, I'd like to have a place in the country, something about living on the planet and supporting it. So those are the things that, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that in the superficial financial planning, the way it's taught, it's mostly about all these financial tools and techniques, and they're wonderful, but they're meant to be in service to those five pursuits of family or relationship, of creativity, of spirit, of community, of planet. And it could be different variations on that or something totally new with the client, because we're all unique, beautiful creatures. Right. That's one of the beauties, I'm sure. It's one of the reasons you're passionate about this work too, Gary, is that we get people to share with us who they really want to be, and then we can help them make it happen.
And I guess, you know, we back into using the traditional financial planning methods and strategies by first being guided by what they said is most important to them.
That's it entirely. And we, in our advanced trainings, we have a whole program about how do you do that. And that's something that hasn't yet been studied by behavioral finance, but I think it would be an incredible thesis or book written about, mm-hmm. how do you actually do that so that you're actually delivering them into freedom using this financial wisdom.
Awesome. Let's get specifically into the seven stages of money maturity.
Great.
Now, you define them as innocence, pain, knowledge, understanding, vigor, vision, and aloha. And that they also fit into three stages of life: childhood, adulthood, and maturity. Yeah. Can you give us a quick overlay of what that means?
Yeah, it's a lot. I have a whole 2-day workshop on what it means. Let's see, and a long book, 350 page book. I think. So childhood, adulthood, and maturity, in a way, that's following kind of classical psychological frameworks. And mm-hmm. in childhood, I put the two stages of innocence and pain. And what innocence really stands for is our naive beliefs around money, our belief systems around money, which are inevitably partial and incomplete. So we might believe that we ought to be saving all the time, or we might believe that, gosh, we ought to spend and enjoy life. But whatever our belief system is, they're almost always not quite complete. And so they can get us into trouble if we emphasize them too much. We see that in our clients. Our clients come in and they're spendthrifts, some of them. Or mm-hmm. they have naive notions about what the stock market can or can't do. So they cling to those notions, and that gets them into trouble. And the consequence of clinging to your innocent messages is pain. And we all know that people, I mean, right now, gosh, who's not feeling pain around their stock portfolio or around their jobs or around their communities? The pain around money right now is extremely intense, probably the worst we've seen since the Great Depression. So right. we know that pain is there, but it can happen in divorce. It can happen in death. It can happen in disability. Coronavirus is going to throw it, because a lot of people are having that, and it's lasting much longer than they thought. So pain are the emotions. So part of what we need to learn to become great advisors is how to listen for those belief systems and support people to become freer in relation to them, more flexible, and support, and also learn to listen for those really difficult feelings that get in the way, envy, greed, all of that stuff, arrogance, getting in the way of having a healthy relationship with money, and learning to have enough emotional intelligence that without being a psychologist, just by being a gracious listener, a kind person, we can help the client to be more at ease in those things and not be trapped by them. And then the three adulthood phases are knowledge, understanding, and vigor. And knowledge is what, Gary, you are up there. You're like in the top 1%, you know, with your PhD and your teaching of behavioral finance and all of this. It's the financial planning knowledge of money. It's really knowing how money works. And but part of that is also knowing the life planning, knowing that that it's very important, most important of all, to know who the client is in that process. So that knowledge is very important, knowing ourselves and then knowing how money works. Understanding is more it's real emotional intelligence. It's transforming, I call it transforming suffering into wisdom. And so that's understanding. It's really about the heart. And vigor, we see that a lot. I know you've seen it, I'm sure. A lot of clients of financial advisors are trust fund babies. They have, and many of them have trouble with vigor because they don't think they need it necessarily because they've got, you know, the trust fund or whatever, or early in life they were robbed of that vigor because the parents didn't believe they needed it in some way. So an understanding of how vigor works and how vitality is inspired is a great thing to know. And it's something we work on a lot in life planning and is very much part of the life planning process. And then the final two stages, vision and aloha, are what I call the maturity phase. And vision is seeing what's needed in our communities around us and being able to deliver it in a community way. And it's part of the what I'm passionate right now, as you know, about helping civilization. I feel civilization's a little fraught right now. Mm-hmm. I'm passionate about bringing life planning skills to civilization because I think it's time to create a great civilization where we aren't polarized and where we're all in it together, making good things happen. So the vision is that place of seeing in our community what's necessary and then doing something about it, having the knowledge, understanding, and vigor to do something about it, having the adult skills to do something. And aloha comes from all the years I spent in Hawaii. They have a wonderful frame, and it's similar to shalom in Israel or namaste in Tibet. And it's this notion that of passing a blessing to another person, regardless of economic difference. So it means being there in a mentor-like way, in a kindly way, in a generosity of spirit, individually, to everybody we meet. And so those are the stages, and those last two are kind of what they come in a way automatically if you develop the hard skills of adulthood, the knowledge, understanding, and vigor.
That's amazing. That is really amazing. One of the things that also came out from going through the seven stages of money maturity is that you discuss a relationship that people have with their money. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, isn't that interesting, Gary? And I know you've studied this a lot. This is maybe it's a trick question because you studied it so much in behavioral finance. But the people mess up around money. Money means so much to people because it means it has something to do with how we've worked hard or how we've failed. It has something to do with our history. Mm-hmm. And then it also has something to do with our imagined future, which is why it can get in the way of our marriages sometimes, why it's the number one cause of divorce, arguments over money. And but also, you know, those habits that we get in the stage of innocence that are built through either through our family structures or through our reacting to our family structures in some way, our feeling that we deserve something else, and not fully investigating it or understanding it. So our attitudes toward money and our emotions around money get in the way of a really healthy relationship with money. But the three skills of adulthood, of knowledge, understanding, and vigor, repair all of that.
Excellent, excellent. Now, when we start talking about the different stages and noting that sometimes, and again, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but sometimes people have emotional conflicts around money,
right,
that don't ever seem to go away. Yeah. How do you begin to get people to see those conflicts and then find ways to get them to transform them into something more positive?
Yeah, you know, one way, of course, and I only did this two or three times in my whole career, is if they're really stuck, really in bad shape, is to refer them to a psychologist, because mm-hmm. clearly there's a psychological functioning going on there. One of the reasons that I invented life planning was that when I was a tax advisor for a number of years before I started the financial planning route. And it happened, I worked in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it happened that half my clients were therapists,
mm-hmm.
one sort or another, psychologists, therapists, psychoanalysts. And so I really got to know their structures of thinking a lot. And so I realized that we needed to do work around the neurotic habits that all of us have around money and other things. But what was interesting with life planning, Gary, is what we discovered was that if we can, because a therapist tends to go back in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They look at how you're functioning psychologically now, and then they look back into the past to what could have brought that about. What life planning does is that it looks at what's happening now. If the client brings up the past, we apply empathy. That's it. We apply mm-hmm. kindness. That's it. A generosity of just kind of a kindly relationship. But our focus is primarily future. So what we do is we build an incredible vision for the client of who they really want to be. And so they might not want to be that stuck person. They might know it already. Or they might not, but they're stuck because part of it is because they're not doing the skydiving that they really want to do, and they've never been able to approach it. Or they've not been playing jazz in the nightclubs on Wednesday evenings the way they'd really like to do. And so we discover that, and we offer them that. In fact, we say, we can make this happen virtually right away, your dream of freedom. We can make it happen virtually right away. And what happens for most people is they get so excited and passionate and engaged and entrepreneurial around making those things happen that their neuroses fall by the wayside. It's astonishing what just simply empathy and support for a passionate pursuit can do.
So it's sort of like helping people find their why, and then helping them live into that.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Awesome. Exactly. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm the Pied Piper when I give my humble opinion that I believe the future of financial planning is in behavioral finance and processes like life planning. Would you agree with that? And what are your hopes for the future of financial planning?
Yeah, I, you and I are on a very similar wavelength here, I think, Gary. My hopes for financial planning are similar in a way to behavioral finance, because I think that the future of financial planning really is this deepening with life planning, which will be supported without question by great behavioral financial research. Because mm-hmm. we'll see that it heals the wounds that clients have. We'll see that it delivers enormous energy, entrepreneurial endeavor, when you really do a life plan with someone and do it well. So my hope for financial planning is that they expand their understanding of what that first meeting is, and that they understand that it involves a profound listening, great emotional intelligence, and that in the second meeting, it involves a tremendous inspirational engagement with the client that leads the client to understand their dream of freedom. And then we deliver that dream of freedom. We promise it and we deliver it within a very short time frame, typically less than 3 years, typically a year and a half or less. And that short time frame gives and this again could be studied by behavioral finance. It hasn't been yet, but it will confirm this because we see it with every client we've got, that short time frame around something you're really passionate about gives you enormous entrepreneurial energy, and nothing gets in your way. So that's beautiful.
That is amazing. That's really the promise that we make in financial planning, but we don't do it with any behavioral finance or life planning component. So how do you think that the CFP curriculum, which is now starting to add some components of behavioral finance to it, how do you think that could be improved?
Well, I think, first of all, to learn how to listen is not an academic study. It's an experiential. So experiential learning. I realize there's a mentorship program and everything, but there really needs to be an experiential learning around listening and around empathizing and around inspiring. And essentially, I'm saying that they really need to have a major segment on something like the EVOKE process that we train in the life planning movement. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. The Kinder Institute does train and coach financial advisors all around the world. And can you tell my students a little bit more about the Kinder Institute of Life Planning and EVOKE as the advanced training and 6-month mentorship program that you have?
Yeah, wonderful, Gary. One of the really exciting things for me has been that I've been able to go global. That I've traveled all over the world delivering life planning in South Africa, in Australia, in Japan, in the Netherlands, in the UK, in India, all over the world. So we have 30 countries that we've delivered it into to financial advisors, and all over the world they're really excited about it. And it is the trainings that we have a 2-day kind of intro, but I recommend starting with the 5-day training, which now is also given in a 4-day Zoom. It's really cool. It's a 4-day Zoom experience, and we're actually discovering that 4-day Zoom EVOKE training is as effective, if not more effective, than the 5-day in-person training. Because you can see all of the people in front of you. It's so immediate, Zoom is. And then we do a 6-month mentorship after that. And the three together build something called a registered life planner designation. But the EVOKE program is the one I'm most excited about. It's the 4-day Zoom program. And what we do is this process. We primarily teach people in these listening skills and empathy and in inspirational skills. And EVOKE is, I mentioned it's an acronym, E for exploration, V for vision, O for obstacles. And those are the three things we primarily train. And there are three separate meetings usually for your typical financial planning client. And then the fourth meeting is the knowledge meeting. And that's your traditional financial planning, laying out the financial plan. And the fifth meeting is execution on the documents and that kind of thing. So those fourth and fifth meetings are pretty much traditional financial planning. The first three are an expansion of your diagnostic meeting and your first meeting, basically. And the first one is just listening and establishing this incredible relationship. One of the things I love about life planning is we have just amazing relationships with our clients, and they're so happy And they're so happy because they end up living their life of freedom as a consequence of this work. So we do exploration, we do vision, where we inspire them. And then the third meeting is the obstacles meeting. The client has been thinking, oh, I'll never be able to do what I want to do, or it might take me 10 or 15 years, or it might take me till retirement. And when they hear from us that we're going to do it within a year and a half, they are so stunned and excited that they get busy. And that obstacles meeting is really dynamic, exciting, vital, vigorous meeting where you and the client are together going at how they will deliver this life of freedom to themselves. And one of the things can get awesome for people or scary for students, Gary, is people can think, oh, I could never be a psychologist. I could never be a coach. I could never, what do I know about helping people with their relationships? Well, we don't do that stuff. We pull all of the answers out of the client. The client knows how to do it. All that we're doing is adding a support and an inspirational framework to say, we can help you make this happen.
That's amazing. So what we're really doing is acting as facilitators to help clients get out of their own way to be an active participant in solving the issues that may be stopping them from meeting their goals and objectives.
Totally, Gary. Totally. Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell us a little bit more about the Registered Life Planner designation.
Yeah, well, we're very excited about it. We add it as an extra. I mean, most of the people that have it all over the world are certified financial planners as well. So it tends to be something that the CFP community loves and is excited about because it adds this extra skill at the beginning of the meetings, the personal skill, and we're aiming at it. We're still seeing whether the coronavirus is going to stop us or not, but we're aiming at having a global conference in October, and we're debating. And in fact, that's going to be in Atlanta, Gary, if it happens.
Oh, okay. And,
so we'd definitely love to see you there. But we don't know right now. It's looking a little dicey, and maybe we'll need to do it through Zoom and then have it a live one a year later. We're aiming to bring people from all over the world, and that we're very excited about that.
Awesome. 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 Let me ask you this. I have my copy of The 7 Stages of Money Maturity, and I've had it since 2000. It was written in 1999. And how does it feel to be one of the pioneers of this sort of thinking around financial planning?
Gary, you're sweet asking it. It's a sweet thing for me, I must say. I feel honored, thrilled, excited, and never knew really that it would happen. But I'm almost an icon at this point, and I'm an elder statesman, so to speak. And it's wonderful to think that in our lives we just keep growing, and that. And that something like this that we do early in our life can become a base for many things coming out of it.
Well, you're definitely an icon. I won't say elder statesman, and the work that you've put in helping people see this piece of financial planning has been amazing.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. I'm really looking forward to meeting you, and I understand we're gonna be together again sometime soon. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I am ensuring that a lot of my students are going to be as excited as I am. Many of them find that although we know that we're trained as technicians in this field and we're able to use a number of strategies to help clients. But I think once students go through my class, they see that this is very valuable and useful for them as they meet clients and talk with them on a day-to-day basis. So I think they'd be just as excited as I am.
Well, we'd love to. We can't wait. Yeah, just really, really wonderful to make this connection with you and go further. Thank you so much.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So I could take up more of your time, but I do thank you. This has been amazing, amazing, amazing. And I'm sure my students are going to enjoy this one as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Gary.
Wow, what a great conversation. Hopefully, these conversations are illuminating, as illuminating for you as they are for me. And stay tuned. We're going to continue to have conversations with behavioral finance experts that illuminate what we do in class. So, see you next time.